The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia. I hope you've been enjoying recent episodes of late. We've been having a very strong run in interviewees on the Colombia Calling podcast. Of course, if you've got anyone you think who needs to be on this show, that they can get in touch with me at columbiacalling@gmail.com, on Twitter, of course, at Columbia Calling, and via the Facebook page. But this is episode 283 of the Columbia Calling podcast, in, yes, going from strength to strength. And this week, we'll be speaking to Daniela Rubio, who is at this moment in Mexico City, but she spends her time between Mexico, Cali in Colombia, and up there in San Francisco, because we're taking on and interviewing and talking about something to do with big data, and indeed the company Premise. Now, their website is premise.com. They're a data analysis company, but they're working here in Cali, in Colombia, to improve lives in there, and of course contribute in terms of the improvement of health, the health sector. Specifically, it's about crowdsourcing and mapping sites where potential sinks and mosquito breeding grounds for the Zika and dengue virus can be found in barrios in Cali. So they'll be mapping this out. Anyway, before I get tongue twisted on this episode and this issue, I'm going to leave you in the capable hands of Adrian Alsamer from Columbia Reports there in Medellin with this week's news update for the second segment of the Columbia Calling show. And then after that, in the third segment, it'll be Daniela Rubio from Premise, premise.com, talking about their mapping efforts in Cali, in the southern city of Cali in Colombia. So thank you again for listening, and don't go away.
My name is Adrian Alsema, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for July 23, 2019. Colombia's government refuses to give up on plans to resume the aerial spraying of coca, despite the court upholding conditions making this almost impossible. President Iván Duque said Saturday that he will comply with the court's conditions and proceed towards using airplanes to spray glyphosate over coca fields. How the president wants to do this is entirely unclear. Colombia's army sacked another three generals from top positions amid an apparent command crisis. Five generals have been asked to retire over the past 10 days while the counterintelligence chief was moved to an administrative position. The removals followed multiple reports of corruption and concerns within the military about army orders to double the number of combat kills and captures. Multiple commanders told press that the only way to obey this order was by executing civilians. The War Crimes Tribunal ordered the Medellin mayor's office to hand over a report with alleged information about the location of mass graves. The report was made by the local Antioquia University, but apparently kept secret. Magistrates and victims blasted the city administration's apparent obstruction of investigations into paramilitary crimes in Medellin. The mass killing of human rights defenders and community leaders appears to be decreasing for the first time since the beginning of the country's peace process in 2016. According to the government and two independent organizations, the first half of this year saw less murders than the same period last year. While the government said that the homicides dropped 35%, think tanks said that this reduction was more likely between 16% and 19%. President Iván Duque said that he believes that FARC leaders Jesús Santrich, Iván Márquez, El Paisa and Romaña are in Venezuela. Providing no evidence, the president told television network RCN he also believed that the missing FARC leaders are protected by the neighbor's government. Santrich disappeared late last month. The others disappeared a year ago already. Their whereabouts are unknown. The FARC has taken a clear distance from Santrich in an apparent attempt to prevent other former guerrilla leaders and fighters following his example. The former guerrilla said in a press release that Santrich let down their party and the people of Colombia by failing to appear at a court hearing. According to UN peace observers, the vast majority of former FARC guerrillas and commanders continue to take part in the peace process. That's the end of this week's news bulletin. Back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
And we're back. This is segment three of the Colombia Calling podcast, episode 283. I'm your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia. And I have a very special guest on the line from Mexico City. I think the first person I've ever had on the line from Mexico. So that's pretty cool. Her name is Daniela Rubio. She's a Mexican-American, lives in San Francisco. But she's program manager for a company called Premise. Now, their website's premise.com, so very easy to look up. But it's fascinating. These guys got in touch with me and they're doing a really incredible study, I would say, or program here in Colombia. And I'm going to let Daniela, of course, talk further about this because it's so much more interesting from someone who's actually within the project. But let me just say that Premise is a data and analytics platform. So some of you out there might know where we're going with this, but actually, let's just say, Daniela, welcome on Colombia Calling and thank you for getting in touch.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here with your podcast. So thank you for being interested in what we're doing in Colombia. Premise is based in San Francisco. We have offices in different cities around the U.S., but we pretty much have projects all over the world. What we do is we have a global network of contributors, which allows us to crowdsource data. And so with this global network, we provide like predictive analytics to our clients, and this analytics and this data that we're collecting is typically from places that is very difficult to reach and to collect data from. So we're doing it with like crowdsourcing, and we're allowing decision makers all around the world to move faster and make better decisions and more efficient on the ground data that is pretty much right away. Collected right away and provided them to them pretty much at the same time. Mm-hmm. So currently one of our biggest programs is in Colombia. And I'm obviously, this is like what I just said, it sounds so complex, but I'm happy to explain it to you if you feel that, you know, I think it might need a little bit more explanation of what we actually do as a company. So basically Premise has an app. Basically, anybody who has a smartphone can download our app. The app is called Premise, and the contributors, which is basically any person, any citizen around the world, will find a marketplace of tasks that they can complete. So the tasks can be from like a simple question that we ask them, like, hey, how's the weather in your city today? How are you feeling? What are your thoughts around, you know, whatever topic? But then we have other more complicated tasks where we ask them to go and find a specific thing around the city or take a photo of a play of a thing that we're looking for. And so this is the data that we're crowdsourcing, if you will, like collecting it. And then with that data, we kind of like imagine we collect all that data and provide it to governments, international organizations, or whoever is interested in this information, you know, to provide better services or to help people through dashboards. So basically through visualizations, through graphs, tables, charts that help them make better decisions, and even maps as well. Of course, we're mapping out places that they themselves couldn't reach before because, you know, it's either too far away, they don't have the resources. Sometimes people can't enter places because it's too dangerous. So we work with local communities that they can recollect, you know, these data. So I don't know if that kind of like answers the question.
Definitely. You've given us a great background. Let me just sort of try and summarize a little bit. So you collect data in real time via this app that anyone can download, anyone can sign up for and start downloading the data that you're looking for. So it sounds to me it sounds like one of these great apps out of San Francisco, kind of the Silicon Valley type thing. Hopefully you're having money thrown at you by investors up there. That would be really cool because I like these things. And you're kind of cutting out the laborious work of the middleman taking surveys or the overworked healthcare system in a developing country such as Colombia, when they say, well, yes, we've had a few cases of a infectious disease, but they have to go to door to door and fill out forms and so on. So what you're doing is you're actually putting it in the hands of the local people to then be able to take this data, put it out there, I guess, in a forum that's available to everyone. And so therefore as a program manager, and let me just say, you've got a background in international relations, international education and policy, international development. And this means that you then can take this data and these figures to governments, let's say, or healthcare entities in let's say Colombia.
Correct. Yep.
Wow. Wow.
There's more.
Go on then, tell me more.
So specifically with our program in Colombia, first of all, I mean, this program is funded by USAID. There was an initiative back in 2016, and I can tell you a bit more about that. But we got funded by them for this initiative. When the Zika outbreak happened, basically, it was called the Zika Grand Challenge, and they were looking for innovative ways of improving monitor and control for vector monitoring and control. So, you know, how do we improve the situation? How do we fix this? Because, you know, Zika is just going anywhere, everywhere. Colombia was probably one of the second, I think it was the second country with the highest number of cases of Zika after Brazil. And specifically, Cali was like one of the cities that had more of the cases. So Primus applied for this, we got a grant, and we started working in Colombia. And kind of like the initial idea was to involve the citizens in not only monitoring and control, as collecting data of like understanding where these mosquitoes were being born, so mosquito breeding sites, but also empowering the people and understand, like making them understand that this is a problem that it's not only the responsibility of the government to solve. It's everyone's responsibility to be aware of this problem and to take care of yourself and your home and like to basically clean your home from mosquito breeding sites. And so, I mean, I know this is such a complex and like big program, but like we've been involving the community through our network, through our app, so involving the community, inviting them to download the app, and like including tasks that have to do with house visits to different homes around the community. And so basically any person can download their app, go and knock on your neighbor's door and just follow the instructions of the app, of a task, and then, I'm talking so much, I'm sure you have so many questions. Okay. The neighbors will say, okay, come into my house. Of course, because the idea is that people know each other in smaller communities rather than having like an official, the government official coming knock on your door. And so they follow the instructions of the task. And the idea is to have the communities inspect their own homes for mosquito breeding sites and not only reported to the government, but also showing them how to destroy them. So typically a burning site is like, you can find it in like buckets of water or old tires. It's just like standing water in like any type of container or in water tanks as well. So if they find it on water tanks, they learn how to clean the tank or empty it if possible, because sometimes the water is for human consumption, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of citizen empowerment and education involved in this program.
So I'm a big fan of citizen empowerment. I'm a big fan of community empowerment because it provides that sense of belonging. And of course, there's that familiarity between, well, I would hope so, between one person and their neighbor, that they can converse in this fashion and they're working for a, let's say, a common good. You know, it's I like this very much indeed. So you've taken a few places in Colombia, and these Cali, Cúcuta, and Santa Marta for this next wave of projects. And I understand you've chosen these because they're cities with a population lower than 500,000 inhabitants, but that can't be because Cali's got more, surely.
No, yeah, I can explain why we chose it. I'm happy to explain. Cali, we were already working with them, digitizing their internal workflows. So we had like a previous relationship with them in the past, like for internal processes that they're doing, which is also like a super interesting topic that I can talk about another time, just like a separate parallel project. And also Cali was, as I mentioned, I think it was one of the top cities with higher incidence of Zika. So Cali was like a must for us just to work with them because we already had a relationship with them. Then we looked for cities that had high incidence of Zika during 2015, 16, 17, during that time when we were like reaching out to them, and basically started inviting them to participate in the program. We didn't want to like just arrive randomly to a city and, you know, build our own network of people, because the purpose of this is like good use of data, like data food, basically. So if there's no one that's going to be using the data, what's the purpose of this? There was no purpose, basically. So we visited a few other cities, I must say, but given the situations, Cúcuta was very interested in participating, and then followed by Santa Marta. We understood that those two cities were smaller in population than Cali, around 500,000 people, as you mentioned. And at the beginning, we were like, well, I don't know if it's going to work. And then we said, you know what? It's interesting to experiment. This is also a pilot. Let's see what happens if we test it out in a smaller city with people that have probably a lower tech literacy level. Like, we don't know if the people there are going to be as tech savvy and using their smartphones or even having smartphones. That was our main question. And bankerized, because I haven't really talked about that, you know, how do you incentivize people to complete this task?
Yeah.
We really haven't talked about that.
Well, we'll get to that. If I ask, yeah. Can ask then, it's like, so you crowdsource the data. It says, you know, in the information that there's 100 active people in each location. How do you, aside from telling them they're working for the greater good and for the healthcare of everyone, how do you motivate these people?
Yeah. So just to correct, we have 10,000 people with the three locations. And so the way that we sent to, so first, how do we recruit them, right? So again, in partnership with the local, with community outreach, but they're doing a lot of this work with pen and paper, right? They're just like having community leaders going out and talking to people and maybe filling out some forms, but God knows where those forms end up. And so all that data is just basically, you know, ramp up in a room or whatever. And so we're working with our local partners. They reached out to their best community leaders and it's like a cascade, right? And so they're basically our stars in each of the cities. But then we also have a separate way of like reaching out to people, which is like through Facebook ads. And so we target people around those cities that we think that might be interested in with ads and invite them to download the app and then kind of like train them all through their phones. We send them like texts on the phones and whatever. And then the way that people complete tasks, as I said, it was a marketplace. So the tasks have specific prices or, basically payments for difficult, depending on the difficulty of the task. So, for example, we were talking about the house inspections, right? A person can get paid up to, I believe it's 4,000 pesos in total, Colombian pesos. I think, yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, if it's like a dollar and a half.
$1.50
or something like that. Yeah. So, and there's like a scale, of course, because we thought about everything. It's like, okay, well, what if the person is able to enter the house and talk to the person and fill out like some questions, but then the person doesn't really allow them to inspect the house? Well, they should get paid for that. What if they inspect the house, but they don't really find anything? Anyway, so then we have like bonuses for them each time that they identify a positive breeding site and they show us that they destroyed it. So they take a photo before and after. And of course, the payment is not immediate. There's a process. Every single submission goes through a thing we call quality control, which is automated. And so we have a machine learning system that kind of like identifies which ones might be fraudulent. And then a human being goes through each one again, like the ones that have been flagged for fraudulent or not, and then accepts or rejects. And so, yeah, people get paid about $1.50 for every house that they visit. And on average, I think our users are visiting around 70 houses per week.
All right. Okay. I can see this working. And so, I mean, you collect, okay, this is, so the really interesting how you sign people up and you've got, I assume, your big team. Let's focus on Cali. You've got a big team of people working there then, submitting. They come from all walks of life?
Correct. That's a very interesting question. So we have a group of people, anthropologists, on the ground as well, because we really wanted to understand who were these people? Like, who are we working with? Are they able to use the phone just as we are here in San Francisco in the middle of Silicon Valley? Probably not. So we had a lot of user research done, and we identified kind of like four, we call them user personas, but it's basically like segments of people. So on one hand, we have kind of like the woman that is very involved with church and like community service, and she's there in the community. She's probably living in a lower income area, but everybody knows her. So her power is being able to enter the houses and just like, having that capability of being able to go around the neighborhood. The challenge with her is probably the fact that she might not have a smartphone, or if she does, she probably doesn't know how to like use the app as well as we would like to. So there's like training required. The second challenge is that they might not have a bank account as well. They might not be bankrupt. On the other hand, we also work with students from universities that are, probably they're like studying epidemiology or anything, biology, medicine, anybody who would be interested in this because they thought of it as an interesting experiment. They're super aware of like what Zika is, how to identify a breeding site. So the data that they're collecting, it's like super interesting. The challenge that we have with, and they also like, they know how to use a smartphone, et cetera, et cetera. The challenge that we have with them is that they're probably not as popular necessarily within like a lot of neighborhoods because they're like at university and they're not necessarily like community leaders per se. There's other types of tasks on the phone. There's tasks that you can just choose to walk a public route and visit a park, for example. So these type of users typically go through those tasks rather than the house visit because of the challenge that it represents. The other one is like, we call them the techie, which is this type of guys that just found out about us through like listening to a podcast or like reading a blog or something. And they're like, oh, cool. I want to do it. And I want to participate and like give back to community. And we had some focus groups with them last year in Cali. And I thought, my initial thought was, okay, I think, these guys are just here for the money. But not really. They were not. They were like very proud of being able to you contribute to society through technology. So, I mean, that was very impressive.
That's really, really interesting indeed, how you have to think of all of these angles. And of course, it makes perfect sense. I mean, I've been doing, it's different. I'm doing a restoration project of a colonial house and I can't be there the whole time. And then I get my mother-in-law, I asked her, she's got a smartphone. It's like, well, can you take a photo? Can I see it? And so she'll walk within, you know, a yard of what I need to see and take a photo. And I said, well, that's nothing. You know, I can't, but it's like that. It's a really interesting that you forget these things. You know, those of us who have had telephones for a while, and of course, a much younger generation than me who are born with a phone in their hand and just know how to manipulate everything in 1 second. It's very interesting having to think of all these things. So if we focus on the health side for a second, so you mean you're talking Zika, but we're also talking dengue because it's the both mosquito-borne diseases, and they both lay their eggs in this sort of, let's say, stagnant water. Mm-hmm. That you now, as a twice sufferer of dengue, normal dengue and hemorrhagic dengue, I am a big fan of this project and this app, I can tell you, because it was in 2006, twice in the same year, and it was a very miserable time. In fact, a side story is I actually had them together with malaria. So it's kind of a bit of a miracle that I lived to see 30, because my 30th birthday was later that year. And I was in rural hospitals in northeastern Brazil. So I was right in the heart of all these areas. Had there been Zika that time, I would have got it. And finally, I ended up in a hospital in Medellin, cut a long story short. And the nurse, well, the doctor, actually, and I will never forget her name, was Ana Maria Gomez Chavdal or something like that. And she said, you may be the luckiest, unluckiest man alive, but you're alive.
Be careful. Yeah. I think you be careful about that because you don't develop antibodies for the next time, do you?
No, like dengue. Dengue, you just keep getting weaker.
Yeah.
So
I think with Zika,
So Zika and dengue, and now I looked at some figures, and the first phase of in 2017, you found 40,000 sinks in Cali sewers. So does that mean 40,000 possible Zika areas? Okay.
No. Oh, I see what you're asking. Oh, the sewers. Mm. So that's the work that we are doing with the Cali workers. Mm-hmm. That it's not necessarily being crowdsourced.
Okay.
So that's the previous job, and it's also done through our app, but that's done through experts. Like they're trained by the Cali government. And what's cool about it is that they use it on a daily basis. There's a total of 40,000 sewers in the city, and they basically they covered all of them. And we have more than 700,000 submissions already. So that's a question. But what's interesting about that story, and I didn't want to go there, but now that you asked, is that we have this data now that allows us to identify the hotspots in the city, the higher percentage. So every time that they visit a sewer, sumidero, they're called sumideros in Espanol. So every time that they visit a sewage, there's a possibility or a probability for it to be positive, right? So positive means there's larva, pupae, or even a mosquito there that belongs to the species of Aedes aegypti, which is the one that has the dengue and Zika. So with the data, our data science team, what they did is identify the cross, the intersections of the city, so intersections of two streets, that at least 75% of the time that somebody inspected the sewage system in that corner was positive. So for the government, that means, oh my God, that area, for whatever reason, it could be so many variables, has a higher probability to always have breeding sites in that area. So what we did is we used that data like direct our contributors from the Civitizen Network to those areas, because we knew that they would there was more probability for them to find positive breeding sites in the homes around that area, which are not visited by the workers from the Cali government, because their only job is to visit the sumideros, the sewage system. That's all they do. They literally just look at the sewage, which is great, but they don't knock on people's doors or anything like that. So that's covered by the Citizen Network. That data gap that we have is covered by the Citizen Network. I know it's like a lot, but that's how we're combining both work. Yeah,
but that's, I mean, of course, that's incredibly important. You're covering that data gap, as you call it, is, you know, you can check sewers. Great. But, you know, we're looking at rooftops. We're looking at their back gardens. We're looking at their front porches. You're looking at, you know, that area where they dry their clothes and the lavadero and things like this. I'm fascinated. And so, I mean, you found all of these things and you've done 700,000 inspections, and then the data gets uploaded into your system, and then we can access it from there. Or is it bought by let's say governments or healthcare systems? Or,
well, in this case, this belongs to the Cali government.
Okay,
so these data is their data, and yeah. I mean, I understand that, you know, the data from the government, like you can request it as a citizen, and they're responsible to provide that data to you. That's the legal process, I believe.
Okay.
They don't necessarily, I mean, because we are being funded by a grant from USAID, the information in this case is, you know, belongs to, in this case, both the USAID, I guess, but it's Kylie's data. Now, it's very interesting because with that information that they're collecting, there's several things, and I'm happy to share that with you. Like, one, it's understanding the heat spots around the city. Uh-huh. So we already talked about the sumideros, but it's the same case with the house visits and the public routes, because, you know, there's like higher probability of finding every time that people visit certain areas. We create maps. And you can see the maps, and I'm happy, like, let me show you how it looks. So I can show you how it looks like on the on our thing. So basically what happens is that Premise has the capacity or the capability of building dashboards that could be as complex as you want them to be. But they're always built depending on our clients or customers' needs. Mm-hmm. So in this case, the needs that they had were relatively simple for some cases. For other cases, they were more complex. So the maps and things like that are probably a little bit more complex. But the collection of the data, they were asking us to basically provide raw data, like on tables and things like that. I actually forgot what was the question?
No, that's not so. It's who it belongs to, really, or do we have to pay for it? I mean, does an entity have to pay for it? But no. Hang on. Okay, yes, I'm seeing now on my screen what you've brought
up.
So
this is like a table, another table of like the number. I remember. I was going to talk about something else, but I wanted to show you. This is kind of like a map.
Yeah.
And you can see, like, it shows where people are submitting data. Uh-huh. So where it's green, there's more submissions. This one shows you like the number of positive breeding sites found in homes. So you can see like, oh, probably there's one at this home. And so the government can see, oh, you know, probably we should like send our workers there and actually act upon it with like further like policies or things
looking,
like that.
Looking quickly at that map before you go on, what you're showing me there, it looks like there's a case every three houses, every three blocks.
Yeah.
You can't say anything on that, but I mean, your map has measles.
So that's the thing. It's like, wait a minute. Did I share my screen already or no? Okay.
No, I haven't got it now, but that's okay.
I think that I mean, our users, remember, they're citizens, and they're not necessarily like experts in like recognizing if this is an IDIS or a coax. So we just know that there was a mosquito breeding site there, and it was clean. That's what's important.
That makes a big difference.
So they discovered a mosquito breeding site and it was clean. One, we have stories about fraud that, you know, they get very creative, carrying mosquito larvae from house to house, and we recognize that fraud, and that is not shown in this map. Like, we're only showing you everything that passed through quality control. And
how do you recognize mosquitoes transferred from place to place?
The mosquitoes, not the larvae.
The larvae. Well, how do you recognize? I guess an expert can tell them apart.
Well, between the machine learning recognition and also the humans that are super used to identifying, they start looking at like the containers, like the type of containers. Like, I've seen this container before. What are you talking about? Or just like, it feels natural. Like, it feels like a real submission. And there's like a list of things that we've identified. Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to, going back to your question, the other things that are, that the government is learning this, but behavioral change. So part of the survey, or like the questions that people are asking in the homes, is that if people are able to recognize the risks, first of all, if they know the risks, like in the long term, like over the break. And the second question is around the symptoms. And so a lot of the time they're like, no, what are the symptoms? So they explain the symptoms to them. For dengue, Zika, and chikungunya, not Zika. And then there's another question around like, hey, when was the last time that you actually inspected your house? And they can answer like last week, last month, last year, never. But imagine that the citizens are going through to visit these homes at least once a month. And so it's very interesting because right now we're looking into, you know, these behavioral change. Like, if you have a person visiting your house once a month asking you, hey, when was the last time that you inspected your house? I guess the second time you're like, oh, I guess I should be inspecting my own house. So the answers to those questions, like, it's very cool to see the graphs. Like, people, first of all, the first one is people are finding less positive breeding sites, which means those houses are learning something that they need to clean and destroy their breeding sites. The second is they are more aware of the risks, of more risks. They know more risks every time because they kind of like memorize it. And they inspect their homes more often. So these behavioral changes are also super, I think they're super cool for our partners because all of their efforts for the community outreach and education are also being covered through this program.
That's to see the change, to see the behavioral change, to see this is very interesting indeed. I wanted to ask one more thing, is because Cali, I mean, we know Cali, there are some difficult areas, and that's why I would assume you're trying to get local people, locally understood, known people, familiar faces to get around. But you tell your let's say citizen data collectors, please be careful in this area. You know, if we're talking about Siloé or Aguas Blancas, and I would assume Aguas Blancas with that canyon going through it would be a hot spot. I really would. And of course, with perhaps less local government interference or intervention there because of the security implications, I would imagine that you also advise your data collectors, you know, don't take unnecessary risks.
For sure. We even took the contributors or like our community leaders' feedback when creating those public routes that I was talking about. We didn't like create the routes just like on my computer. So we trace them on a map, and then we have workshops on the ground. And what happens in those neighborhoods is that sometimes you can walk three blocks, but then like the next one, you can't go there, right? So they helped us with that. The second thing is, I mean, the message on the task is always like, you know, this, the idea is for you to go through your neighborhood, If you want to go somewhere else, just make sure, you know, it's kind of like, it's, please just make sure that.
So what, like that. Finally, because we've got to wind this down, I think we could talk for hours because it's so very interesting. But finally, are you going to move to smaller towns, villages around Colombia? Is this something that you're going to expand into? Because I can think of a lot of places that could really, really, really benefit from this.
Yes, we would love to. Actually, well, in terms of continuity and expansion, Cali's Secretary of Health has already expressed their desire to continue with this program. So it's very exciting for us, both their internal work that they're doing with the Sumideros inspections and the citizen network. And so right now, as we speak, we're working towards creating a contract with them to expand our work with them. So this funding will come from the cities now. And then regarding new cities, we're having a workshop on August 1st, and I'm just going to put it out there, and we're inviting, you know, people from other cities, and they've already had received that from, I'm pretty sure, because we sent letters of invitation, for them to understand, like, to learn about this program and the results of it. So it's going to be in Cali. And the idea is obviously to present the results and kind of like create interest into new cities so that we expand the program with them. The original goal was to expand into three cities. Mm. So we kind of like already fulfilled that goal, but now it's a question of like continuity and expansion.
The benefits are huge, but you're also grappling, I think, as I wind this down, with what they call here is the idiosyncrasy of the politicians and, a lot of the time the reactions are delayed here, you know. They'd rather for example, a small town where I spend a lot of time, there has to be two or three reported cases of dengue before they are able to release the chemicals to fumigate, rather than fumigating in the wet season just prior to all the larva hatching. You know, there's an expression for this, but it's not on my head, not in my mind right now. But they let the problem start before. There we go. That's perfect. I think I knew it better in Spanish. But that's a lot of the problems here is that, okay, well, no, we haven't got, you know, but there will be the wet season and there will be this, and this is a tropical area and this is going to, I don't mean to be negative, but it's the truth. It's the truth. So sometimes I imagine you're trying to convince people, I think, but again, the benefits far outweigh it. And if Cali's seeing success from that, they can then share that with other cities, of course.
Yeah, this is prevention, not remediation, right? It's also use of data. Use of data and evidence for decision making, which is also something that, you know, Latin American governments are relatively young in that area. It's citizen engagement. It's financial inclusion because people are opening bank accounts. It's just getting better phones just to complete these tasks. Being able to, you know, have an economic activity and survive for a few months. Because this is not a job, it's a gig. They do it on their free time. Great.
Well, I mean, thank you so much for your time and thank you for getting in touch. I will be checking back at the Premise website to see updates and news. For all of you out there interested, that's premise.com. So it's based out of San Francisco, but they seem to be down here in Colombia a lot. So before long, you're going to run into someone working on a premise project or a data collector, out there harvesting information about potential larvae hotspots for the mosquitoes, the Aedes aegypti, and so on that spread Zika and dengue. But I can only see benefits of this as a former sufferer of the both dengues, I only want dengue eradicated. Don't think that's happening soon, but let me take this moment to say thank you so much for Daniela Rubio to take some time out of her afternoon up there in Mexico and before she comes down here to Colombia to explain this really fascinating app and entity, which is, you know, kind of revolutionizing the way we use data for healthcare, I think.
Thank you.
Well, it's been a great pleasure talking to Daniela Rubio of Premise, premise.com. Of course, get in touch with us at columbiacalling@gmail.com, Columbia Calling on Facebook, Columbia Calling on Twitter as well. I love hearing from you. I've had quite a fair few emails in the last few days, feedback and so on. But this has been episode 283. So we keep going on from strength to strength. I have been Richard McColl for the Columbia Calling podcast. Please ensure that you spread the word and keep on telling all folks about the Columbia Calling podcast, and thank you again for tuning in. Bye-bye.